Before I begin, I would like to send a message out. Oh, what's that? Thanks. Send a message out to my New York colleagues who may be watching. You will be happy to know that I got to Chicago and it was snowing, and I couldn't almost make it here. Could have driven to Utica. Instead, snow in Chicago. All right. So, a great beginning. No fear. We're going to, you know, everything's fine. You know, Anne's the mother bear. She does a great job. No failure. You're going to be fine. We'll get you through this. We're going to feed you on a regular basis. And so with that, I would like to then continue the theme by introducing for you my presentation, which starts with everything you learned in library school is wrong. So it's always good to begin a new effort by telling you precisely how you screwed up the previous one. And in this case, as a library school professor, I'm the one who screwed things up. And so part of the reason we created I Lead You was to try and fix things. Actually, I was talking with some folks who weren't necessarily happy with this title, so I did change it a bit. Almost everything you learn in library school is wrong. So I don't want you to think everything is. The other thing is I want to get a bit of vocabulary going early. You may use it or you may not. I'm going to use the word librarian a lot. Now, what's interesting is when some of us use the word librarian, we mean that as a very inclusive term. Yet some people use that as a very exclusive term, right? I am a librarian, you are a paraprofessional, I am a this, you are that. We need to get over that really quickly. I think there are three ways to become a librarian in the world. Number one, you go to library school. This is the preferred method because it keeps my family fed. Number two, you get hired and they call you a librarian. Whether you know it or not, right? But we have that situation. There are whole states that can't afford the tuition that it takes for library school and such. And so we sort of end up in this position and we're not quite sure what to do. Now, what I love about this program and what I love about the state libraries that I've talked with is a recognition that just because you have that title doesn't mean you should be left on your own, that it's in fact a responsibility of the whole profession to bring folks along. Number three, which is a very exclusive group, are people who were born librarians, right? These are, and I don't just mean people who organize the books on the nightstands. I mean, you know, there's a spirit of service. There's an interesting, everyone has this reaction. For example, I did when I went into the doctoral program, and I was interested in multimedia and technology and all this fun stuff. And suddenly I started interacting with librarians, and I was like, oh, my people, right? Oh, they have values. Oh, they care about things. Oh, they love technology, but they love service, and it's a group. And you find this kindred spirit. So I'm going to use the word librarians a lot, and what I mean by that are those here physically, but also in streaming, and those who may be watching the recording. I mean that as a wide net. So if you are someone who's in the middle of library school, if you are someone who got library school through the front desk, if you are whatever it is, library staff, we are the people who are looking at caring and feeding for this profession. So in that, why are we taking you back to this idea that, well, that's great, but it's all wrong? What happened is the world has changed. And what's very interesting is, you know, Twitter didn't change the world. I've been watching the Twitter feed, and clearly people are believing that Twitter didn't change the world because they couldn't get onto it. But this idea that somehow new internet, new technology, this totally shattered our understanding of the universe. I would argue that potentially indoor plumbing had a greater effect on the population than Twitter. It did little things like allow us to move from a life expectancy of 40 to 70. I think that probably had a pretty major effect on our world. And the other thing that we're seeing, that the technology is showing, it's making it bigger, but we're seeing this rather dramatic shift from institutions and organizations and buildings to individuals. Now, I don't just mean that in libraries. I mean that, for example, in education. In education, the model, and the reason I'm not standing on the stage is a political statement, right? The old idea of the sage on the stage has been replaced by the guide on the side, right? It's the old model that you probably lived in an auditorium like this at some point, and as the instructor, I looked out, and all I saw were empty buckets. And I would throw bricks of knowledge delicately into the audience, because it's easy to throw delicately through bricks. And it would, you know, bang into your bucket, and then you would have learned. And if maybe it didn't make any sense, perhaps your bucket was a little too small, right? Because it certainly couldn't have been my fault, because I know what I'm talking about. So therefore, right, I don't know about you, freshman year, first day of classes, excited, right? Because I'm now a freshman in college, and I'm away from my parents, and I'm pretty sure I'm going to be drunk any minute now. And I go into my first lecture, and an hour and a half, I'm walking back to my dorm going, I'm done with college. What was that all about? I have no idea what a lecture is. Where was, you know. I tell freshmen coming in, I said, please, before you graduate, thank your teachers. They're the last professional teachers you'll ever have in your life. Now you're stuck with me, right? But we said that's not how it works. We don't teach people. People learn, right? This idea that when we come to a community, it's not a matter of saying, you know, this is what you're going to know because I said so. Because we know that you could sit in that chair and go, no, right? I disagree. I'm not going to learn. I don't like it. I'm hungry. Whatever it is, they're different. That won't happen here. But this idea that shift has happened. Remember in the good old days when a government report meant authoritative and not bait for Jon Stewart and Fox News? Right? This whole notion of who says it's credible. If it's on TV, it must be true. If it's on the internet, it must be true. Right now, it's we make those determinations. We're seeing this all over the place. In healthcare and medicine, it's not a matter of going to the doctor and waiting for the pill. Now it's about, God help us, staying healthy and monitoring our health and monitoring how we're doing, and we become part of it. This shift away from them, whatever the global them is, to us being in charge of it. How many people have either a smartwatch or you've got the Fitbit, you've got some sort of fitness band that measures what you're walking, right? You'll love this. I was talking to a medical manufacturer about 10 years ago, and they love you. He said, because the growing market isn't sick people, thank goodness. The growing market is the worried well. Wow. That you're healthy, but you're worried you're not going to stay healthy, right? So I can tell you how my son is 11. He comes home. He's got his Fitbit. He's like, Dad, I got this many steps. And I'm like, well, I got this many steps. He goes, yeah, but I'm not fat. So, you know, it's yeah, oh, yeah, that's my son. He's anyway. But that would be bad. Anyway, the point is librarianship is that's happening too. Think about it. We're librarians. What makes us librarians? For how many people went to library school and they actually started with the... Actually, I'm curious. How many people, when you went to the library school, actually started with the definition of what is a library? I'm surprised there's one. I'm surprised there's two. So what we're going to spend a little bit of time on is our buddy Einstein here said... Common sense is the collection of prejudices acquired by age 18. Right? Great quote. I would argue that how we see the library field is not from some sort of truth, is not from some sort of grounded reality, is not from some sort of magical instantiation of the universe. It's because we sort of learned it that way. And part of what we need to do now, and part of what I Lead USA is about, part of all of this is to relearn what librarianship is. Because as I said, right, I say, how many started with this idea of what is a library? The answer is probably none, and I include myself teaching it because it's kind of assumed. Well, you're in library school. You didn't just like accidentally show up here. Clearly something brought you here. But if you look at it, it's one thing to say we know what it is. Like this is the Oxford English Dictionary version of what it is. Right, so we're going to excuse the room in a private house where books are kept, fine. Collection of programs and software, fine. We'll let them use that for now. But we'll go up to the top. A building or room containing collections of books, periodicals, and sometimes films and recorded music for people to read, borrow, or refer to, such as a school library. Now, what's wrong with this definition, he says? Well, what's the difference between that definition and how we think of a library and this? Because the truth is, there's a good chance that people in this room and watching this stream are responsible for this, right? This is the used book sale, right? This is when all the librarians retire from staff and they go join the Friends of the Library so they can keep the books you're trying to weed and they can put them back in and call it a shop, right? This is the vicious circle of, you know, it must be important. Let's keep it. I tell the story in where I live, we have a pretty good recycling program. And once a year, they have book recycling. And so you're able to get rid of all your books and they'll be recycled. And people on the library board, I was on the library board the first time they did this, they went, what? Recycle books, we must save them. I mean, it was like, you know, bum, 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 we're going to storm the barricades of the recycling center and take our textbooks back. And the librarian said, no, we don't have time. The board said, oh, we got to do this. Librarians were like, really? No, we don't have time. And librarians and the board member said, oh, I know, I run a scout troop. We'll bring Boy Scouts in and they'll help sort it. And the librarians were like, okay, we got to be honest. We did have time and we went down there. And it turns out what people recycling and what we consider books are not necessarily a shared definition. There are plenty of people using this as an opportunity to get rid of Hustler because it's all online now. And librarians standing shoulder to shoulder with Boy Scouts sorting through this wasn't exactly their idea of a healthy and constructive conversation. So this idea doesn't fit, right? We don't want to be this because the idea that this is a library quickly turns into this is a library. And you look at this picture and go, oh, phew. A person who really loves materials and books and saved them. Hey, wait, is that a lamp in the back? Hey, is that a dresser? Is that his house? Yes. This is a psychopathic hoarder. This is, right? The difference between a librarian and a hoarder? Canvas bags. Canvas bags. I used that at the University of Toronto, and what did they give me as a gift at the end? A canvas bag, right? Because, you know, this is even a nice hoarder, and but we've all seen, you know, like, this is the nice hoarding where they go and fix them in the 30-minute segment, but we've all seen that one on TLC, which is not so happy, right? Because this is the next step, right? This is not what we want people to think of as a library, and yet it's a place that collects books and materials and sometimes sound and video. So that definition doesn't work very well. We don't like that definition because we don't want to include that, right? And that turns into things like, well, what is a librarian? Because if you look up the definition right now, you're probably many people sitting there going, what is the definition of a librarian? It's someone who helps and works in a library, sometimes with a master's degree. Really? Does that include anyone in the library? Now, sometimes I just started with a pretty big inclusive list, but there are some people that really don't want to be considered librarians if they're working in that building, right? They're janitorial staff, they're security staff, there are some head of human resources that really sort of glad that they're not librarians, et cetera. Right? So this is a problem. And yet, this is the common sense that we have been trained is librarianship. It's a place with stuff. We maintain the place with stuff. And if that were how we looked at libraries, we wouldn't need this project because I can teach you how to maintain stuff. It's not a big deal, right? I can teach you MARC and now RDA and OMI, and we can learn about different metadata initiatives and such. But it's got to be something different. Imagine, for example, if I said that you were a farmer. People go, okay, I'm a farmer. Now, what's interesting about farming is that a farmer will be as part of an identified profession that went back to, I'm tired of getting eaten by saber-toothed cats, I'm going to plant some wheat now. And yet a farmer today does radically different things with different tools and different means to accomplish the same task, which is to raise food, right? If you were a farmer in the 18th century and you met a farmer today and you started talking about gene-modified crops and harvesters and GPS locations and crop rotations, whatever, they would go, how are we the same profession? And yet, that's the lineage. We have a lineage of librarianship that goes back 4,000 years, and yet, do we still look at ourselves the same way? Our tools change. Our methods change. And so we're moving to this person away from an institution. In other words, a library should not be defining what a librarian is. A librarian should be defining what a library is. And that is a big change. And if you're sitting there going, well, don't we do that now? Anyone know where this quote comes from? Pop quiz. ALA. Oh, you're going to be embarrassed. It's your code of ethics. It's number one of the ALA code of ethics. you guys have to have this memorized. We're talking about librarian tattoos, good place to begin. But read it for a minute. We provide the highest level of service to all library users through appropriate and usefully organized resources, equitable service policies, equitable access, and accurate, unbiased, and courteous response to all requests. Now, if we read that for a moment, does that mean that if you're a librarian and you're not working in the library, screw them? Right? Because you provide it to library users, but if they're not library users, you don't have to be, you know, courteous? No. You don't have to be any of it. It doesn't work. Quick joke. That's all I have is quick jokes. So, Mary the librarian dies. It's always good to start. We were watching Disney movies. Isn't it amazing how every Disney movie starts with death? Anyway, so Mary the librarian dies, goes up to heaven, and God calls a meeting. And God calls to this meeting three people. He calls Mary the librarian, he calls Melville Dewey, and he calls Linnaeus, the father of modern cataloging, right? And God says, I've got a problem. He says, I've done it. I've pulled the trigger. I've called the apocalypse. I've brought all the souls up from earth. They're sitting behind that door. Little bitty problem. When I made this deal, there were a lot fewer of you. And now you got busy, and there are like 9 billion people I got to sort through. I'm not quite sure how to do it. So Linnaeus says, no problem. I got this one. He goes. He opens up the door. Hour goes by. 2 hours goes by. At hour three, the door opens and he crawls out and says, I couldn't do it. I gave up. He says, I ran out of Latin. He says, when I got to steampunk Japanese teenagers, I just didn't know what to call them. Forget it. So Melville Dewey, being the humble individual that he always was, says, I got this one. No problem. Goes in, closes the door. Hour one, hour two, hour three. Gets it to 5 hours. 5 hours, Melville comes out. Glasses askew, says, I couldn't do it. I gave up. He says, I ran out of numbers. You know, I was dividing them by religion, and after I got through all the Christian sects, you know, everything, you know, there, did you know there's other people besides Christians? So he's out. So Mary, just not enjoying sitting in committee meetings, says, I got this one, walks through the door, 10 minutes later, walks back, says, done, handled. God says, what'd you do? Says, real easy. I said, everyone who's ever supported a library budget, please raise your hand. The rest of you can go to hell. So
he's here all week.
That's right. Try the steak. All right. So the idea here is, you know, we look at the building and somehow we gain some professional identity by mortar. Sometimes we've taken this whole idea that librarianship comes from the place we work. And yet, what we have to offer a society goes so far beyond that, and beyond a place with stuff and sometimes recordings that's organized. So let's, for the rest of the day, rest of my time here, I want to break down two pieces of common sense. Common sense number one, that is that libraries are good and necessary things, and two, libraries collect, organize, and provide access to information. Now, if you saw these statements, you would probably go, eh, sure. But I gave you the big rigmarole and the bad joke. And so we know there's already a problem with these two statements, which is that libraries do nothing but exert gravity and shield you from the rain. Right? They're buildings, they're org charts, it's people. And so what we need to do is change this to not libraries do this, but librarians do this. Right? So that's the first mental shift. And I say that, you all fine, big deal. Had a wonderful librarian. She had some community members come to her and say, we want to learn how to square dance. And they didn't have room in the library, so what she did, she went down the street, and I'm not making this up, to an ice rink, and she had a square dancing session in the ice rink. Apparently not on the ice, though that would have been hilarious. And the next day she came in, and these librarians were giving her the evil stare, you know, the passive aggressive. And she said, what? And they said, what was that? She goes, it was a library program. They said, no, it wasn't. She goes, what do you mean? Because it wasn't in, say it with me, the library. Right? That attitude slips in everywhere. The library's where you are. It's in what you're doing as the service. All right? So that's the first thing. So let's then take one of these statements. Let's take this concept that librarians collect, organize, and provide access to information and break that one down a little bit. See if we're happy with that one. The first obvious question that you probably didn't hear about, but increasingly are hearing about, is for whom? You collect, organize, and provide access to information for whom? Right? Everyone? Is it really everyone? Think about it for a moment. If you're in a public library setting, what percentage of taxpayers come into your library for you to get service? If it is like the vast majority of public libraries in the United States, that number is well under 20% of the population. Now, they may be well served, they may be the neediest 20%, but to say that you do it for everyone is not true. So, are you happy with that? Are you okay with that? Who makes that choice? There's a great line in usability study that goes something like, if you design a system for everyone, you design it for no one. Knowing your population, we're going to hear later today about usability for all different kinds of communities, different expectations, different physical communities, different age groups, all of this, knowing for whom is important. And yet, as in library school, we said, no problem, you'll figure that out when you get to the library. By the way, we're not going to actually tell you how to figure it out, but you'll figure it out when you get into your library, because you're all working in a library, regardless of the fact that a huge percentage of our professional mass actually exists in vendors and different companies and things that are nowhere near a library. And here's the biggie. Why? Why do we do this? Right? This is that pathological hoarding question. Why do we do this? Are we insane? Right? Ann Craig walked in just a few minutes before you did, going, I said, hi, Ann. She went, and then lovely. I said, what's the matter, Ann? She goes, work. Why do we do this to ourselves, right? Why do we on a regular basis and do this information? Right? Well, I think the why comes from this problem, which is, here's another term which we take for granted, information, right? We provide information, we organize information, we slice, we dice information. Information is like a Ginsu knife to us. We can go ahead and make you an information soup. We can make it a salad. It could be a necktie. It could be a floor polish and a dessert topping. Right? How many people know what information is? All right, so you're welcome to tweet your answers while streaming, but I'm going to pick on the guys in front of me. Who has a definition for information? Everyone's shy and scared now.
Organized data.
I like that.
Good job.
Good job. Absolutely. Right? So, you know, it's this stuff. It's data, but it's not just any data. We don't just throw it on the floor and hope for the best. We organize it. We put it together, and that adds information. Anyone else?
Something
that is useful. One definition is often put is, it is a difference that makes a difference. Right? Because you get into all of this about it. You read a book twice. Was it information both times? Was it the same information? Some of you probably ran into this little hierarchy, the data, information, knowledge, wisdom hierarchy. Data is the big stuff. It's measurement, ones and zeros, or it could be analog measurements. And if you add context to it, it becomes information. So if I say that, for example, it is 20 outside, 20 is data, 20 degrees, you go, oh. Now I know what to do. Wear a coat, don't wear a coat. Unless, of course, you're in Canada, in which case you wear shorts, right? So information, it's squishy, right? How much context do you need and how far do you go, right? And then if you can get patterns or you can make something out, it becomes knowledge that 20 is hot or cold. And wisdom, the ever elusive wisdom, is when you can take these patterns in context and make sense of it and use it for your own good. It's 20 outside. I can go to school and sell my mittens to to unprepared undergraduates for $20 a mitten. Not saying I've done that, but I've done that. Right? Or this one, because librarians, it's not just a matter of organizing it a little bit, we organize it a lot. Semantically rich, and this is Ferber. This is Ferber. Ferber is a great idea because we have works and we have manifestations and we have items and we have expressions and we have lots of stuff. We don't use it, but we have lots of stuff. We Ferberize things the way many people dry clean things, right? So we have information. Here's the problem. any of these definitions, what is information to you and what is information to me is radically different, right? I don't trust who said this, so therefore it's not information, it's misinformation. I read this already, it's not new to me, therefore it's not information. Oh, it's confirming information. I'm not kidding. A fellow by the name of Zinn asked 50 different information scientists what their definition of information was. He received 50 different definitions of what is information. I asked five of my faculty, I got 10 answers back, my favorite of which is, I don't know, I don't care, right? It doesn't make any sense. This information thing, it exists, it doesn't, but we use it. Sometimes we use it like it's a thing. Here, let me hand you information. Sometimes we use it as a process. This will inform you. Sometimes we use it as knowledge. I am informed. But I don't like this word. I like this word, knowledge. Some people say, oh, great, Dave, that's not much. Oh, that's clear. Yeah, absolutely. But knowledge is the things that we act upon. It's the things that we believe that tell us when you put on a coat, when you don't. Is it a good thing to go to Springfield? Isn't it? Is this going to work? Isn't it? Do I depend on my car? It's the things that we see the world as. And we can test it. We can say, given this, what do you do? And see a response and all this other stuff. So knowledge is a much more useful term. And I like the idea of calling myself a knowledge worker as opposed to an information worker, even though I still don't know what I do. But there's a couple things to know about knowledge. First, it is a uniquely human aspect, meaning you can't write it down. The books on your shelves are not knowledge. The minute you write it down and hand it to someone, you've created an artifact. You've created a brief shadow of the true knowledge, some representation. And it's not guaranteed to transfer, because if it were guaranteed to transfer, we'd be back in the bucket business, right? I wrote a book, read the book, that's the truth, move on. I wish people would do that. Unfortunately, they like picking on me and disagreeing, and it's no fun. So, first of all, if we're in the knowledge business, if librarians collect and organize and provide access to knowledge, that means we're providing something beyond stuff. We're providing access to other humans. Sometimes they're surrogates, sometimes books and materials, but sometimes other people, other experts. And how do we gain knowledge? We gain knowledge through an internal dialogue, a conversation. Now, that conversation is something that we go, literally, hey, how'd you go? Where'd you eat last night? Was it good? Right? So we're sort of, or how do I do this? Did you try this on Twitter? Did you see this? And we're having conversations. And individuals can have conversations. Groups can have conversations. Your team is having a conversation about what your project is. Whole societies can have conversations. But most of the conversations we have are with ourselves. And if you just said, what does he mean, I have a conversation with myself? Who are you talking to? Right? If you woke up this morning and said, it's 6:30, the bus leaves at 6:55, I could get out of bed or I could stay in bed. I could, you know, have a bagel or I could have the bacon, right? That internal dialogue is you learning. You're going, you're testing, you're trying, etc. So that means if librarians collect, organize, provide access to knowledge, what we're providing access to are human conversations. That stuff, those books, that material, that's not knowledge. If you read a book, you're not having a conversation with the book. It's either tree pulp or bits on a screen. You're not having a conversation with the author because if you're reading Shakespeare, it's a neat trick. But I don't buy it. You're having a conversation with yourself. And we've all had some intense conversations, right? A book that changed your life. Mine was, in junior year of high school, I read My Name is Asher Lev, and I realized that I could be an art geek and not completely alone, right? Now, I said that to someone else, and she came up to me after a conversation, oh, me too! Oh, I love My Name is Asher Lev. I'm, you know, as an Orthodox Jew in Brooklyn growing up, and she had a totally different experience with that book. Because they had different internal dialogues. But the book wasn't the knowledge. It's what we took away from it. If you want to look at your shelves of stuff, they are not knowledge sitting waiting. They're kindling. And I don't mean kindling as in, oh great, burning books, good metaphor, Dave. I mean kindling for our imagination, our conversations, and they're starters. They get us thinking. They get our juices going. Some of the greatest learning doesn't come from a textbook or a nonfiction book. It comes from beautiful fiction. There's a discussion about access to women in the developing world having access to fiction. Because unless they had stories that talked about the possibilities of what they could do with their life, the limited availability of narratives, of stories, limited their development. You want to keep someone at home and quiet and not bothering you? Don't let them read. Right? How do you limit political action? Don't let them get at the information. Don't let them hear stories. Don't let them see what happened elsewhere. So this idea that we do stuff is wrong. And the other thing that we need to know about knowledge is that it is relational. That means that each of us carry a unique set of relations. Some of us look at I Lead You after the end of this process and we'll see it as a wonderful experience. Some of us will see it as a wonderfully fattening experience. Some of us will see it as a cold experience. Some of us will see it as hard work, all of these things. And that's true for you. I'll give you a quick example. I'm going to give you a word, and I want you to think about what that word means. Ready? Light. L-I-G-H-T. Light. All right. Show of hands, how many people thought not heavy? How many people thought illumination? How many people thought to set a fire? Thank God, right? But why'd you laugh? You laugh because that's how all jokes work. You see the connection, but it's an unexpected one, right? Second one, formula. Formula. How many people think mathematical equation? How many people think chemical combination? How many people think what you give to a baby to keep it from starving to death? Grandmother, aunt, uncle, right? That idea is those relationships are radically different. I did this within a class once. We don't have time, but I said, all right, give me two words. And one said, Kentucky Fried Chicken. All right, Kentucky Fried Chicken. I said, give me another one. They said, Margaret Thatcher. Margaret Thatcher. I said, well, Eli's coming, right?
Yeah.
Shit. I said, how do you link these two? And I said, all right. KFC, Colonel Sanders, Colonel, military title, Margaret Thatcher, head of government, ran the military, boom. And someone said, I got one for you. I said, okay. I said, turns out Margaret Thatcher, before she was a politician, was a chemist, and she worked in food chemistry, and she helped develop soft ice cream. So next time you have a nice Dairy Queen cone, you can thank Margaret Thatcher. And so Margaret Thatcher, soft ice cream, fattening, quick fast food, Kentucky Fried Chicken. Those are all interesting, valid connections, right? Now, when you are collecting, organizing, and providing access to uniquely human knowledge where you have all these different connections, what do? You take the name of a guy who's been dead for 100 years who was an anti-Semitic misogynist and you organize them by decimal numbers. Is this really how we get to people's human knowledge? Don't believe me? Go into the Dewey Religion section and see where you can find things, right? So this idea that somehow we have universal ways of organizing the world, that how my library organizes stuff or even looks or what services offer should somehow be standard across the world is crazy. Why is it that I can walk into a library right here in Springfield, I can walk into another one in Seattle, I can walk in another one in, and I'm not kidding, Namibia and Kenya, and they all have a reference desk, stacks, Dewey Decimal numbers on them, and somewhere hidden a poster that turns the numbers into like real English. Right? Why? Because we used to believe there was one universal way of looking at the world. It just happened to be coming from white landowning males. Right? But now we say, what does our community look like? How do we organize this stuff? Because we're in the knowledge business, we're not in the stuff business. So ultimately, librarians collect and organize and provide access to conversations and their relations to objects and other conversations. So when you are thinking about your projects and I Lead You, you've probably started with, what stuff do I have and how do I organize them? I've got lost stuff. How do I organize the lost stuff? I've got history stuff. How do I organize the history stuff? I've got tablets and their stuff. How do I get access to tablets? Stop it. What are your communities needing to know? And how do you link it? Because sometimes it's not the stuff. Sometimes it's you. And sometimes it's someone else. And sometimes it's a person. Sometimes it's just a place. So ultimately, librarians are in the learning business. And the collection that we bring to that, the collection we bring to it isn't the things on the shelf. it's our community. All too often, librarians seek to lead their communities to knowledge this way. We turn our backs and assume that what our community needs is all the information that's created everywhere but the community. Think about it. If I were going to travel to a location, if I'm going to travel to Austin, Texas, and I go to the Austin, Texas Library, how much am I, as someone who lives in Syracuse, New York, going to learn about Austin from the Austin Library? How much of their own information, their own knowledge, their own community, their own unique culture is embodied and captured and transmitted and disseminated at the Austin Library? And how much is it about everywhere but Austin? Well, they don't need our stuff. They're in Austin. They don't need it. Think about this. Did any of you guys in public libraries have the tax form issue this year? Right? So what's happened? The IRS has pulled back because it's saving money, and they've left websites in their wake. And so they say, you can get it all on the web, unless, of course, you don't have internet access or don't know how to use the web, or even if you're on the web, have any idea what this thing is called. So what happened? Librarians stood up and said, we'll take it. And then they said, all right, here are the forms. Now they don't even give us the forms. So what's our option as librarians in that situation? All too often, our answer is, I'll become a tax expert. Right? I was having fun last night with reference librarians who are showing off what they know, right? As different communities have pulled back, librarians have felt, oh, we guess we're going to be social workers now. Oh, I guess we're going to be tax experts now. Oh, I guess because in library school we taught that as a librarian you can be a generalist and you can know everything. We were wrong. What you need to think about is, you know what? Living two doors down from me, I bet there's a tax expert. I bet there's a law expert. I bet there's an artist. I bet there's a writer. I bet there's a naturalist. I bet there's someone brilliant that I never thought about before. That's your collection. When someone asks you for tax help, don't sit there and go, I'm going to do the best I can. Good luck, right? Bring in someone who can do this. Connect to people. When someone comes in and it's sitting at the Abraham Lincoln Library, send them there. Connect them. That's your collection. Back to common sense. Next piece of common sense we've got to tear down is that librarians are good and necessary things. Are we allowed to ask that question? Yes, we are. So, some of you may have heard of a little town not too far away called Ferguson, Missouri. In the middle of Ferguson, race riots was fun, peaceful protests, black kids, white cops, horrible things happened. And in the middle of that, the Ferguson Public Library put out a little sign that said, Ferguson, stay strong, we're all family. And they changed the narrative from protests and violence and militarized police forces and all of this, they changed it into, this is a community in crisis. Because suddenly, as they opened the schools and as people began using the library, in Syracuse, New York, I said, you know, this isn't that different than Syracuse. It no longer became that two-dimensional thing happening down the street. It could happen here and it could happen there, and they changed the narrative. And in the midst of tweeting and blogging this out, someone sent me this tweet. Of course, because a library always makes a difference. A library always makes a difference. Now, that's a great sentiment. That's a nice little balm for us feeling happy and kind about ourselves. But it's wrong. It's wrong for a couple of reasons. First of all, the one we've already gone through. A library doesn't do anything. A librarian always makes a difference. But that's not right either. Because librarians are people. And as people, we have this little wacky thing called free will. So it's not that we always make a difference. We have to choose to make a difference. When Ferguson closed their schools and they closed their all their civil institutions, you're trying to tell me that Scott couldn't have gotten on the phone to the mayor and going, maybe today, no story time. Maybe today we won't open. But he didn't. He chose to open those doors. He chose to do this. Librarians don't just make a difference. They have to choose to make a difference. If you look at yourself and say, I'm going to wait, that anyone has a problem, they can come ask me. No one has ever changed the world by waiting to be asked. If you don't leave your building, if you don't leave that 12% of population you serve, if you don't see yourself doing something higher than simply organizing a room full of stuff, you will not make a difference. Well, you will. You'll drain tax assets that could go to things like sewers and police. We say it's important for public investment, for universities. Universities, where the model of academic publishing is literally bankrupting our universities. It is going to bankrupt Harvard. Harvard. Harvard has an endowment bigger than most countries, and they're talking about how their library will bankrupt their operations because inflation of costs go over and over. You're making a difference. I'm just not sure it's the one you want to make, right? So we have to choose to make a difference, which means it's not about the building, it's not about the organization, it's not about the library, because they don't choose. We choose. If you have a website and you looked at the website of your library and said, our website sucks, I've got bad news for you. Your website sucks because you're part of that organization. You may not win that battle, but did you even have that battle? Did you have a conversation about policy? Did you have a conversation about what's going? Did you have a conversation about accessibility? Did you have a conversation about bringing a community in every so often to look at this thing? Right? So we have to choose to make a difference, and we do that. The reason we choose to do that is because of our mission. The mission of librarians, not of libraries, not of organizations, not of things on paper, not of buildings, not of mortar, but of you, is to improve society. Feel free to stop it right there. How do we do it? Because there are lots of people who want to improve society. Some do it through protection, some do it through commerce, some do it through aesthetics, some do it through writing, all different ways of doing it. We choose to do it by facilitating knowledge creation in our communities, not hoarding materials that may, but by going out and figuring out, are we making our communities more knowledgeable? So it is about people, not institutions. And we know that this knowledge creation process is created through conversation. Do you host conversations? When people walk into your library, how many of you have a sign that says, put these away? This is a school, put them away. This is our big conversation right now. If you're 14 years old and you have one of these and you walk in to learn, our school district is currently saying, take the thing which frankly is more valuable to you in your mind than the textbook in your back and put it away. And you say, oh, they're 14, they're supposed to be learning, they're going to be distracted. How many of you, if you forgot your cell phone at home, walk around all day doing this? There, anyone get the phantom vibrations? It's a real thing, right? Let's face it, you know, the difference between a heroin addict and someone who forgot their phone is that we don't lose weight when we fidget and look uncomfortable, right? So how are they, do you do it in your library? Oh, shh. Now be clear. I want to be really, 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 really clear. Do not walk out of this saying, Dave hates books and Dave thinks that the quiet space in libraries is a bad idea. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is, what does your community need? I can't give you an answer for every library. You must have a quiet space. Yeah, but have you seen this crazy group? They're loud, and they do a lot of stuff when they're loud. We need that. Oh, Dave hates books. I write books. I like books. I particularly like when people buy books. I like books. But I don't for a minute think that just by writing a book, I've somehow created knowledge in the world. It's my tool to do so. So we create knowledge by facilitating conversations, and some of those are really, really, really hard conversations. Some of those are conversations that people don't feel safe having anywhere else but a library. About race, about gender, about power, about opportunity and inequity. There's a great thing called a human library where people check out lawyers and they check out professors and teachers. In Europe, they have something that they call the prejudice library where you can check out a prejudice. How many Muslims do you have in your close friend group? None? Maybe you should talk to someone. And we can do it in a safe and civil and civic environment. We can have conversations here that we can't elsewhere. There is no more town square except the library. And I include, by the way, academic libraries. And I include school libraries. Where can someone who's being beaten to death by knowing a certain physics strand and common core, where can they go to just learn about ants? Because by God, they love ants. They can go to the school library. Many of us, we fled to the school library when we were there because it was a place that we could control the conversation. We could investigate and look where we want. How do we create that in an academic environment, in a legal environment, in all these different environments? And we facilitate. What does that mean? Well, sometimes it's access. We give you access to the place, to the stuff, to the tools. But here's the important thing. Access, like conversations, two ways. When someone comes to your library and says, not, I want to read about this, but I want to tell people about this, what do we say? Think about just for a minute. I wrote a book. You could write a book. I take my book, and if I walk in your library with my book, and I say, I'd like to put this on your shelf, how much harder is that than just pulling a book that's already on the shelf? And if the answer is it's a lot harder, then you're not in the conversation business, you're in the consumption business. You're in the Netflix of stuff business. If you're not allowing people to participate and organize and share, Eli will come. I don't think he tells the story anymore, so I'll tell it for him. If not, just pretend you heard it from him. He tells the story about when they built the distributed online catalog, right? Like the archetypical old school library catalog. You go and search for your materials. He had a patron who went and he goes, you know how I can ask if you have a book at this library? Eli, who's in charge of putting it together, said, yes. He goes, you know how I can find out if that book is somewhere at another one of the branches? And Eli says, yes. Is there a reason that people can't find out that I have that book at home? I'm perfectly willing to bring it in the next day and loan it out and share it. Now, if that sounds, what? You have access in a one-way mentality, that you buy stuff, that you then ration that stuff out, and you loan it to people. If you look at it and suddenly go, I hadn't thought about that, then suddenly you're in a sharing economy, and you're sharing, and suddenly you begin to go, well, they can share books, but they could share experiences, and they could share images, and they could share talents, and they could share all new things. That's a different way of looking at it, and it's librarianship because it's about knowledge. How much is your project in iLead USA, and how much are your library, your organization, you as an individual, how much are you not about bringing people in to consume in your library, but by having your library act as a bullhorn to tell the world about your great ideas and unleash your community to the rest of the world? It's why, by the way, I hate the term user. Old joke number one, only two types of people have users, computer scientists and drug dealers. Number two, it may be really nice to call someone a user, but are you willing to stand up and proudly announce that you have just been used? The user came in and they used me good. Right? Right? Then we become abuse victims, right? So user, not big fan. Patron, not in the 18th century painting, not so much. Reader, they're going to be people who learn from reading and writing and drawing and making and videos and all this kind of stuff. Why would we ever restrict knowledge creation to a single tool? It's like saying, I'm sorry, you can only learn with a pencil. I can't use a pen? No, why not? Because all we have is pencils. You know, this idea of it's not then about them and what they're trying to get, it's about us and what we're willing to provide. I mean, you gotta remember, in the 1970s, we had an honest-to-God, field-wide, serious conversation about paperbacks, right? People's like, oh, libraries are in the book business. No, we suck at the book business. If you're in the book business, you don't take a book, wrap it in plastic, slap a sticker on it, and let people eat on top of it in their own homes. That is not being in the book business. You're not. Get over it. You're in the learning business. So we provide access, not only to stuff, but access to ideas to share to other people. We provide training and knowledge. When people get there, how do they know? Not simply, can you read and write this language, but we had a whole GED program. One of the teams in iLead USA said, people come in and they need to learn to get a job. They need this basic form of education. They begin to provide it. Right? This idea of an environment, a safe environment, safe intellectually. A library is a safe place to access dangerous ideas. A librarian is a safe guide to access dangerous territory. Right? That's what we believe in privacy and intellectual freedom. Do we provide an environment where people feel safe in doing this? How do we provide that environment? How do we allow them to come in and use that? And how do we build on their motivation? We assume that people come into us because they're already motivated, right? By the time they walk in the library, we assume they've already made the decision to use us. Do I have any school librarians hanging out physically? You have tons and tons of students who walk in to tell you about the term paper they can't wait to write on George frickin' Washington because it's President's Month, right? Never. Right, never. Extrinsic motivation, by the way, is not a bad thing. Gamification is an extrinsic motivational technique to get people to ask questions and such. But intrinsic motivation, that's the goal. One of the examples of putting these together, Betsy Kennedy, the director of the Cazenovia Public Library outside of Syracuse, New York, tells the story. Cazenovia is a rich little enclave village on a beautiful lake, but it happens to be situated in the poorest county of New York State. And what they realized was there are a lot of people who may come to the Cazenovia Library or may not even be able to make it because they have such desperate needs. So they began setting up weekly service at a food pantry. And they began doing story times at a food pantry in this. And then they began doing, oh no, bringing new books and giving new books to people at the food pantry. And she tells a story about giving a new book to a young girl. And the girl starts to cry. And when she tried to figure out why the girl was crying, the girl said, "This is the first new thing I have ever owned." That book wasn't about reading. Remember that relational knowledge in hers? It wasn't book equals reading equals knowledge. It was book equals self-worth equals importance. And while they were there and they set up the book services, they realized that the parents bringing in the kids for the food services, they weren't having many opportunities because they didn't have the education, so they began setting up high school equivalency courses, and they began doing tutoring and mentoring of the adults. And when they ran out of room, they started working with the churches throughout the county so they could do this in lots and lots of places. That's the idea of what librarians make a difference, not we're going to wait till you ask a question, not, oh, look, we've organized the stuff. Be really clear. Part of the way we provide that environment, that knowledge, is to organize a playground. Right? The academy. Everyone talks about academics and the academy being really boring and stodgy, yes? Comes from Plato's gym. It was a Greek gym where a bunch of smart people would like work out and say, "Hey, nature mean, how's that going?" "Well, let me tell you. There's this cave, there are shadows," right? Right? Your libraries, so I've already used one analogy, the books are kindling, but you should be lighting a Burning Man, going to having a playground for people to come in, experiment, try. Do things, not just read. People say, well, it's a place to escape, and that may be true. But that means as librarians, it's not our job to escape, it's our job to work like hell to engage people and provide them alternative narratives in their own lives. Right? And we improve society. This is the ethical counterbalance to the second. That is, we bring values to this. We bring a value of learning, that learning is vital and important. That it's vital and important in the most open environment possible, the most transparent environment possible. That we provide intellectual freedom and safety, right? And ultimately, we act as intellectually honest brokers. You are not unbiased. You have a bias. If you believe those values, you have a perspective that not everyone else believes. The idea that people learn in the richest, widest environment is not a universally held belief. People learn the quickest in a targeted way, where we test the hell out of them, right? How many of you in the public sector or in the school sectors have said, come to the library because this Common Core, highly restrictive thing isn't working or you're trying to escape it? You are making a value judgment and you are no longer neutral, right? You're intellectually honest. I have these perspectives. You may not. Because if you simply have someone come in and say, I'm interested in learning about man-made climate change, and you say, oh great, here's the 99% agreement of the scientifically vetted world that it exists, and that member says, I don't believe it, that's all garbage. Let me tell you how quickly not to change their opinion. But 99% of the scientific value, there's 99%, it's right here. Right? You can't start where you want them to be. You have to start with where they are. And if you think about improvement, that means you're going to try and move them. You're going to move them to be more open, more intellectually honest, deeper in their discussion, more experiential, more hands-on. Those are biases. Those who improve society are not unbiased. You are not unbiased. By being a librarian and working in a library, you have made a declaration that there is value in a library. A value, by the way, which is very much at odds with much of the rest of the capital society we exist in. You believe in a public good in a place that doesn't always believe in a public good. There's a reason that academic libraries don't go, oh, you're in arts and sciences, this is your bill, you're in physical science, this is your bill, because we believe by collecting and aggregating that together, we create well-rounded individuals. That is not an unbiased view. If you believe in privacy and the importance of privacy, that is not an unbiased view, right? Remember, you're saying everyone believes that. Eric Schmidt wanted people to be able to change their name at 18 to just give up. Is that how we want to be, right? Zuckerberg believes everyone should have a gender and should have their real name out there what they're going to share in social networks. Is that how you believe it? I'm sorry, if you're going to come into my library, I first need to know your DNA sample. Thank you very much, right? Those means you're not unbiased. You are not neutral. Neutral comes from the same root word as neutered. I don't think that's what we want to praise ourselves on, right? You are not invisible. You don't simply sit and wait and maybe they'll ask me a question. You want to know the best way to support people's conversations? You go to the conversation. If you want to support academics doing research, how much time do you spend in their labs? If you want to support teachers teaching, how much time do you spend in the classroom? If you want to support communities building business opportunities, how much time do you spend at the Better Business Bureau? And how much time in the Chamber of Commerce? And get out of the damn building, because here's the trick. It used to be that the library was a building for librarians to do their work. It is not. It is a space for a community to do their work and the librarians to get out of to do the work of helping the community. That's the theme over and over again. That's the change that we're talking about. Library school used to be about maintaining a facility. Now it's about enhancing a community. That's where we're trying to go. And here's the big one. You are not alone. You are not alone. First of all, as I lead USAA type, you're not alone as a librarian. You have a project team. You have a mentor. You have a community member. You're building a cohort. And this cohort, over the past 5 and 6 years, has built a pretty massive cohort of people who understand and buy this. When I used to give this message, I would get the, well, there is information in my job, and I am unbiased. This is not a new message anymore. I mean, I love getting up here and pretending like I'm saying something radical when everyone sits there and goes, yeah, so? That's a difference. That's a big change to look at your community and look beyond your books. And if you say, Dave, we do that now, then take a look at your budget and see how much of your budget is devoted to the stuff and how much of your budget is devoted to the people and the community and the services. You've made a choice. You are not unbiased. You are not neutral. You're not alone because teachers are making this transition. Doctors are making this transition. Lawyers are making this transition. Our whole communities are making this transition. We believe in makers now. Not makers as they did 3D printing. Everyone makes something, whether it's making an idea, making a 3D print, making a movie, making a video. We are rejecting the concept that we are merely consumers stuck in walled gardens. And as librarians, we bring our values and our efforts to show and demonstrate that. We provide the power to do that. And that means that you must change. If you seek radical positive change, if you seek a community that embraces and is constantly learning, if you seek a community that is empowered and believes that it can make its own destiny better, if you believe that you can provide more opportunities to people than if you didn't exist, if you believe that, that's what you're going to bring to your community. And what you also need to believe is that the value that you bring is in improved community, not an improved collection. When someone sits there and goes, how good of a librarian you are, it is not the number of things you've cataloged, not the number of things you've shelved, not how many doors you've opened or toner cartridges you've changed. It's in the lives that you've changed. It's in the abilities in bringing new things. These projects in I Lead You, where we talked about One group looked at unemployment and said, yes, there's a massive unemployment problem. We need to provide employment issues. But they didn't stop there. They said, when we went and talked and looked into that community, we found out this is a major life change for them. The first reaction when you're laid off is to go get another job. But when you think about it, when you look at it, maybe it's go back and get a different education. Maybe it's for your spouse to go get a better job so you can stay home with the kids, which you've always wanted to do. Maybe this is an opportunity to go in a totally different direction. This is a life change. And as librarians, bringing that realization changed lives. The former state librarian of Maine tells that during one of the economic downturns in the 90s, every day she would have gentlemen show up in business suits to come to the library. Every day they would come in and they would read the paper. They'd look at the job options. They work on their resumes. Now, the standard reaction is, oh, we have a patron. We'll wait for them to ask a question. How to do a resume? Here's a book. Or we'll have a class on it. But what she realized is why they were coming, that they were dressed in suits, meant something. What that meant was they were looking not simply for a job, but they were also looking for validation along the way. So you took a staff room, cleared it out, put a coffee pot in it, and put a plaque across the door going, businessman meeting room. And they began meeting there. And years later, they came and said, yes, I found that job, but I found that job because I found hope, because you respected me as a person. That's what we're talking about, knowing your community, not surveying the hell out of them. That's one mechanism. Not talking to just the ones who walk into your building. That's another way, but a smaller way. And not, for God's sake, not asking them, what can the library do for you? They don't know, and it's not about you. And don't just ask them what their problems are. How many people have friends that their entire life is coming and going, you know, that outfit sucks. You know, I don't know what you're, right? The minute, you know, you get a little tired of being told what's wrong with you all the time, so you don't make friends that way. How many times have you said, we need a reading program because kids don't read enough? How many times have you said, we need greater literacy in this effort? Oh, we need remedial skills on this, where you have focused on what's wrong with the community. How many times have you gone to the community and said, what do you dream about? What are your aspirations? What is the narrative you want for this community? That's the Ferguson story. The Ferguson Public Library changed the narrative from protests and militarized police into a community in crisis, and race was everywhere. That was a valuable discussion. What's your community conversation? What's your narrative? Who's part of that? How do they do the aspirations? And you don't improve the world by simply building a collection. And if you're going to improve the world, don't just sit there and document it. Be part of it. Make the change. If you expect your community to be lifelong learners, be lifelong learners. If you expect them to be makers, make. If you expect them to take issues of power and culture and disability and handicap, take all of that as important, then you better demonstrate it on your website and your daily operations and how you work services. Show your values. Don't simply sit back, feel that you're unbiased, above a fray, and hope the community gets better because you're there with a collection of stuff. It doesn't work that way. What you learned in library school, if it was about maintaining a place and maintaining books and maintaining stuff, if you learned that your value came solely because you had a title or because you had the privilege of working in a building, then we have failed. What you need to learn as a librarian, librarian by degree, librarian by title, librarian by spirit, is that what makes you a professional librarian is your mission, the means of facilitating that happening, but ultimately your means of actively going forward and making a community a better thing. Making a community better, tighter, and understanding where they want to be in helping them realize their dreams and not constantly reminding them of their faults. Thank you very much. I appreciate your time. I think I'm ready.